Hence and grass. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha ani kak. Gunish cheese.
Listener supported KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan. Fall membership continues through tomorrow, the fall membership campaign. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gwyneth Chi, Shawa, Tuksuk Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPM Live or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. Conversations coming up this hour. The Juno Arts and Humanities Council is kicking off a new series next week, Jack Laughs. We talk with Zach Pease about this new series, which will present Sam Miller next Thursday, September 25th. The Juno Live Studio TV production course for all ages is back this fall. It's a free hands-on course running on Tuesdays from 6 to 8 p.m., and there is still room for you to take part. And we'll begin today with St. Vincent de Paul's emergency cold weather shelter opening soon, as well as their Friends of the Poor walk/run event later this month. It's Juno Afternoon on KTOO, made possible with your support. Donate at ktoo.org. And Gwyneth Cheesh for your support. And before we begin today, I just wanted to mention an event that's happening tomorrow night. It's Juno Witch Fest 2025. It's tomorrow night, Saturday, September 20th, from 6 to 2 a.m. at the Alaskan Hotel and Bar. It is an inclusive gathering of psychics, mystics, spiritual healers, and magical folks, celebrating all things natural and magically divine while recognizing and honoring the witch in all of us. It's live music and an indoor market from 6 to 10 p.m. with a DJ dance party from 10 to 2 a.m. It's free admission, but it is 21 plus, and you can go to Facebook or Instagram and search Juno Witch Fest. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 in Juno and 91.7 in Juno Auk Bay and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us for our live stream for a behind-the-scenes look here in the studio on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. As temperatures dip, St. Vincent de Paul is ready to open its doors once again to the emergency cold weather shelter for the coming winter. In addition, they have an annual event happening on September 27th, the Walk to End Poverty, Friends of the Poor walk/run. I am joined now by two folks. I have Jennifer Skinner, who is the executive director of St. Vincent de Paul. Gwyneth Cheesh, Wasiti, how are you?
Good, thank you for having me.
And we also have Christine Demert, Wasiti. Gwyneth Cheesh, how are you today?
Doing really good. Thank you for having us.
Of course. It's so nice to have you in the studio. So let's begin with the warming shelter. Let's talk a little bit about that. It looks like it's going to be opening about mid-October. October, Jennifer?
Yep, as scheduled. October 15th is when we begin receiving patrons. We are actively hiring right now for staff that are interested. You can apply online or go to Indeed. We also have a presence on Indeed. We are really excited about this season. We really do appreciate being able to support our community in this respect, keep people safe and off the streets during the coldest times of the year. It's going to be in the same location, which is the Thane location, the same as the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So that keeps things kind of consistent for our folks that we serve. Pickups are going to be the same.
A little about out Thane, right?
Yep, a little out towards Thane.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and then and there were some improvements that were made a couple years ago in terms of like more bathrooms and more security and all that kind of stuff. That's all going to continue?
Yes, we still have our indoor bathrooms. They've gotten another facelift this season.
Nice.
Always looking for ways to improve and meet the needs of those we serve.
And you said that the passenger vans will still be in effect as well. How do people go about learning how to take part in that in terms of getting a van and whatnot?
And getting to our services?
Yeah.
So we have some pickup locations. They're pretty standard. We will go outside of those areas if we just happen to find somebody who might be, you know, on the street, and we will pull over and ask, hey, do you need a ride to the warming shelter? You have a safe place to stay tonight?
Yeah.
But our regular pickups are usually the downtown transit center throughout the evening. And then we'll also go all the way out into the valley near, kind of in between the Glory Hall and St. Vincent de Paul campus, right there on the Teal Street, at that, like, bus area right in there was where we'll be picking up people in the evening to bring them down to the warming shelter.
And what are the hours of the rides as well as the shelter?
Yeah, we start picking up about 8:45 in the evening to get people to the shelter for the 9 p.m. opening.
Okay.
We operate from 9 p.m. to 6:45 in the morning.
Okay.
We provide rides out of the warming shelter as well in the morning. So we have a 15-passenger van. We will have access to some other transportation resources as well. We're still working out some of those details, but we will also have the bus that comes and does one run in the morning at 6:45 for us to help get folks out.
Okay, excellent. And in addition to the warming shelter, I know that St. Vincent de Paul has some other services because obviously at 6:45, Then what do I do, right? Where do I go then? Is there other things that that folks can take advantage of during the day, or other things that St. Vincent de Paul has, or that you might recommend other services or social service agencies that they can find out about?
Yeah, so, you know, our operation is nighttime-based to keep folks off the street during the evening. We do encourage, you know, meeting with navigators. We have a navigator program on-site at St. Vincent de Paul, as well as some of our partner agency.
What's a navigator program?
So our navigator program is basically a resource connection person. So they can go and meet with our navigator, and she can help with filling out housing applications, resource connect you. If we can identify areas in someone's life that they need support in and they don't know how to get that support, we will take them to that support, you know, get the testing needed done if rehabilitation services are something that someone's interested in. So we kind of just meet somebody right where they're at and try to dissect what areas in their life that they need help in, and that's what we address with them.
Okay, so it opens on the 15th of October.
Yeah.
You're hiring
folks.
You can find out more information probably at svdpjuno.org.
Correct.
Or on Indeed.
Indeed as
well.
And
what kind of things are you hiring for?
So what we're looking for is our overnight staff. So we call them warming shelter assistants, and everyone kind of plays different roles, but all the same kind of job description, if you will. So, you know, you could be helping, handing out blankets for the evening. You could be handing out food. You could be helping set up, do intakes. We have documentation that we are required to do. So we have a myriad of things that you can do throughout the night, and then just providing support throughout the night for our guests.
That's excellent. And then how long will it last, the warming shelter go? Will it go through the spring?
Yes, we're hopeful that we will maintain the regular season schedule for right now. There is some funding that needs to be approved by the city still.
I was going to ask about that because funding for everyone is an issue.
Yeah.
And so it's keeping it open is not free.
It's not free.
Right.
It's not free. And so we have our contract in place, and we love partnering with the city. We will be able to provide services for as long as we can. Usually we close April 15th. If funding doesn't get approved, it'll close a little earlier.
I see. Okay. And like I said, it is something that is not cheap or free to make happen. And so one of the things that you do is you have some events around from some fundraising, perhaps. And one of them is this event that you have coming on Saturday, September 27th. It's the Walk to End Poverty, Friends of the Poor Walk/Run. But before we begin talking about that, will you introduce and tell us a little bit about your guest?
Yes, I'm happy to do so. So I'm happy to introduce our friend, our newest volunteer. She has joined one of our committees, our public relations committees. We also collaborate with Clinkin and Heidel a lot on serving all the population within Juneau that has similar needs. And so Christine Demert has come to us as someone who has an interest in helping others. And she has been a wonderful addition to our committee and our process, and so we're happy to have her. She works with Clinkin and Haida, and I'll let her tell you her job role there. But we love collaboration with our other nonprofits and our other agencies within the town that do the same kind of things that we do, because, you know, it takes many to address the problems. So
absolutely,
we're happy to have her.
And Christina, I think maybe, have you been on the show before? Were you on recently?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. All right. That's all right. So tell me first what you do at Clinkin and Haida.
So I'm a community advocate.
Okay.
What I do is I help victims of crime.
Mm.
And I help with things like filing for protective orders, filing police reports, help with like filing housing applications, finding childcare assistance, resources, things like that.
Okay. And how long have you been doing that?
I've been with the tribe for almost 5 years, but this is my first year in this position.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's cool. So then what made you want to volunteer at St. Vincent de Paul?
I go to the Tuesday meetings with them, and I just really like, I got to know Dave and Jennifer through there, and I really like their mission through St. Vincent de Paul, and they inspired me to kind of want to join their team.
Get involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the Tuesday meeting that you went to? What is that?
We do a collaborative efforts meeting for a lot of other social service agencies within our community. We meet and we discuss ways to problem solve situations, trends, identifying needs, you know, ways to better improve our services as a collaborative group of folks. So
Christine, are you, what are you working on now in terms of your volunteering efforts at St. Vincent de Paul?
This is actually my first event with them, so I'm very excited.
Okay, so you're working on the Friends of the Poor walk/run?
Yeah, and I just have one last thing to add, that you can donate to our website at SVDP.juneau.org, and forms can be picked up at the thrift store or the Teal Street office.
Okay, excellent. So, Jennifer, tell me a little bit about this Walk to End Poverty, Friends of the Poor walk/run. I believe it's like a national event, too,
right? It is a national event.
Yeah, okay.
So we honor that, and it aligns with some Catholic holidays for our agency as well. So that's why it's this time of year. A lot of people are like, why would you do this at the end of September? But that's why.
It's so cold and rainy. Why
but,
would you do
know,
that? But it aligns with those dates that they do nationally,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so in an effort to honor that, we keep the dates in that same period. It's a really great event. We do it as a way to also outreach and show what we do as an agency. And so we kind of wrap it all together so you can do the 5K run. That sign up, it starts at 8:30 a.m. on the 27th. You can just show up and sign up, or you can do it in advance like Christine mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You show up at our thrift store. We do the Evar Trail for that.
Okay.
So it's kind of, and then you wrap back around back to our thrift store. And then the walk part starts at 10 a.m., also starts at the thrift store. And then we walk towards the neighborhood between the thrift store and our campus at Teal Street, which ends with a barbecue and tours of our facility and just really great time to spend with our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could be walking with somebody who's absolutely experiencing homelessness at that moment, or, you know, get a hot dog from somebody who's staying in our transitional housing. And it really just brings that human side to the suffering that folks go through, and the fact that, you know, it can reduce some of those stigmas, right?
Yeah.
Like when you can see a human and you're like, oh, well, they look like me. And you know, it really just normalizes and makes that connection possible for folks.
Right,
so
right.
We like bringing all walks of life together to experience these types of situations so that, you know, it can build awareness.
And who are you welcoming in to do this walk run? Is anybody eligible
to
come?
Anybody. Yeah. So okay. We have a $25 suggested donation rate, but we will happily accept more.
I see. Yeah, of course, right?
It's just a suggestion. And
funny.
I mean, just for reference sake, Christine, if you would share with what a little bit does, a little bit of money can do for a family in need.
Sure.
So, for instance. It's okay. So, like, for instance, a $25 donation, like your registration donation, can be the price of a sleeping bag or a tarp for somebody experiencing homelessness.
And, like, $50 is the price of a bus pass or emergency transportation. $100 could pay for groceries for a whole week. $600 would cover a shelter room rent for a whole month.
Wow. Okay.
So just to kind of – it allows for people to understand – how much goes into supporting folks and also where their money can go. 100% of the proceeds go right back into St. Vincent de Paul operations. So it, funding our programs. We like to do the most good that we can with the money we raise. So.
Well, and that all helps, especially it helps the individual items like that, but then it helps the emergency cold weather shelter make that possible, which is really great. And of course, it doesn't happen without other partners, right?
That's right. We would like to give a special thanks to a community partner, Hanson and Gress, who sponsored this event for us at a silver membership level. Thank you so much for being a partner. Without folks like Hanson and Gress showing an interest in the work we do, we couldn't continue our work. So
yeah, Hanson Gress is also our IT folks here at KTO. They do fantastic work.
We really love working with them and equally partnering with
them.
They're
one of the sponsors of Juno Afternoon, which I also really appreciate. So
as do we.
So it's the Cold Weather Warming Shelter opening on October 15th, and then the Walk to End Poverty, Friends of the Poor Walk/Run. It'll be on Saturday, September 27th. You can find out more and register for that at svdpjuno.org. Jennifer Skinner, Christine Demmert, Gwyneth Cheesh for being here. Thank you so much for sharing this information with us.
Thank you for having us.
Of course.
Thank you.
Up next is this week's Tongass Voices. It's a series from KTO sharing weekly perspectives from the homelands of the Occoquan and beyond. Juno High School students Olivia Gomez and Maddie Bass are playing student debaters in Perseverance Theater's new play, What the Constitution Means to Me. The play reflects playwright Heidi Schreck's experience as a teenager participating in constitutional debates in 1989 and how it influenced her understanding of the founding document of our government as an adult. During the play's run in Juno, Gomez and Bass step into Schreck's shoes and draw on their own experience in high school debate.
I'm Olivia Gomez. I'm a senior at Juno Douglas High School. I play debater in the performance What the Constitution Means to Me. Aside from that, I'm also the debate captain of Juno Douglas's drama debate and forensics team. I'm very proud to be.
Hi, my name's Maddie Bass. I'm a sophomore at Juno Douglas High School. I'm Olivia's understudy for the role of debater and What the Constitution Means to Me. I've also been debating for 1 year.
I will say for, I think, debate, particularly because a lot of the topics are politically focused, it really gives you a more open-minded perspective going into things. Like, you're kind of forced to hear these resolutions and you have your preliminary ideas about it, such as, like, for example, the topic for nationals last year was on balance, the benefits of executive orders outweigh their harms. And of course, everyone kind of has their bias on it, but you're kind of forced to consider both aspects of it and really consider, okay, I have to weigh these really hard factors. And I think that's really helpful, not especially for younger minds, because I really believe that we need more young people politically involved.
Our world has drastically changed since Heidi Schreck was a teenager. So it's a really interesting way for the audience to see how, even though, you know, Heidi was talking about the Constitution, what was it, 30 years ago, and it's still just as relevant to us today. I've learned the most about the laws of this country and how my own life has been shaped by the Constitution from these past couple weeks working on this play. You know, it's the baseline for all the protections and all the harms for people in this country, which is something so fascinating and so scary at the same time.
Yeah. Obviously, this script was written a while ago, but I really, truly think that what makes this play so special is that its importance is timeless. It will always be relevant in how we can better shape our democracy, the question of how we can get better as a country, which is really what the play centers around, and how we can fight for better, positive human rights for all of us is really the theme that it shows.
There are two different versions of the debate. So if you go and watch this play, you're going to see a coin flip. That coin flip is real. We don't know which side we're taking when we go into this performance. So there is that little bit of improvisation in there too. Yeah.
There's also a little room for mystery as to which side we'll be arguing, which is going to be really cool because we're also going to be keeping tally of which way the audience votes because the audience will be our judges.
That is Olivia Gomez and Maddie Bass, who are playing in What the Constitution Means to Me. It continues at Perseverance Theater through September 28th. For more information, you can visit ptalaska.org. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. And some folks who also know about streaming and various other things about being on video is the Juno Live Studio TV. And they have a production course for all ages. It has returned for the fall. It's a 15-hour course over several weeks, and there is still room for you to get involved. I am joined now by Bradley Perkins. Chishwasiti, Bradley, how are you?
Great. Thank you for fitting us in. We're really thrilled to be here again.
Of course. And also I have Karen Loffer, who's the congregation president and also on the TV production staff. Wasiati Gunachish, how are you?
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you here, Karen. But before we also continue, I have to just have fun with Bradley's job title. People send in notes about they're coming on the program. And this is Bradley's title. I love this. RLC, which stands for the Resurrection Lutheran Church, right? So it's RLC Programs, Grants, Food Safety, Shelter, and Facility Maintenance Management, Use and Scheduling Manager, semicolon, Producer and Director of Juno Live Studio and TV Production Programs, semicolon, Counsel to the RLC Council and President, and Alaska Synod TV Council Member. That is
City council member. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you divide your time? Do you time block? How do you make sure?
It means I volunteer for too much stuff. It means we're also a little thin right now on volunteers to do things. So
it's just you got a lot in there. I love it because all the things you do at the church is pretty amazing. Like you have a lot of jobs there.
Yeah, and also sometimes I say jack of all trades, master of none, because I've learned over all my years I've learned to do too many things. Somebody says, "Do you know how to pot geraniums?" I say, "Oh, you're." Years ago, I used to own a geranium farm. That's not true, but you know.
Right. You just start saying, I can do it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I can do it.
But we're here to talk about the Juno Live Studio TV production course for all ages. A lot of times in the summer or spring break, you have these programs for high school and junior high students and things like that. But then you started this program for all ages. So tell us a little bit about the overall view of what the TV production course for all ages is?
Well, it's the same course for the kids that we're teaching the same course, but we thought about this, and so this will be the second year that we're doing it. And it was like, wouldn't this be great to be able to have families, you know, bring in the family. Mm-hmm. So all ages and everybody can learn together. And so that's kind of how that started. Bring in the family and learn something that was totally out of my wheelhouse. I can tell you that. You know, my background was public health, and all of a sudden COVID hit, and I was learning how to run cameras and be a director and lightings and scenes, and I've learned so much from all of that. So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
After retiring from the state, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
Sounds like a TV director maybe or something.
Well, you know, and it's funny because now you watch a movie or a production, and I'm trying to figure out camera angles and all the other things.
How did they do that?
Yes. Yeah. And so it's kind of funny that way.
Since you've just started, I'm curious, like, and since COVID basically, what's like the top thing that has stuck with you, the biggest lesson that you've learned in terms of TV production?
I think that it's preparation.
Mm.
You need to be prepared. In other words, depending on what you're doing, you need to know. Tech rehearsals and all of those things are very important to know where you're going to think about shots and lighting, et cetera, and so on. And then the other thing is, if it's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong.
Right.
And to be able to think on your feet fast to deal with an issue.
There's a phrase I've always remembered. It comes from various different acting things that I learned a long time ago, but it says, prepare to improvise.
Correct. Right?
Which means you have to have the preparation, but then that creates an opportunity for you then to be able to handle any situation that comes up, right?
Correct.
I deal with that almost every day here on live radio, right? So different situations come up, and hopefully I am as prepared as I can be to handle those. So Bradley, give us an overview of the course, what we're going to learn. I know it started this week, I believe.
Well, actually, we pushed it back a week.
Oh, you did? You pushed it back a week.
To be honest with you, we also could talk a little bit about what's going on at the at our food bank and our cafeteria.
Of course, yeah, we'll get to that.
As we're overwhelmed right now, and so we decided just to push back 1 week. And
I
so,
see, okay.
So we're going to start, it's going to go Tuesdays, it runs from 6 to 8 o'clock on Tuesdays from now through December 16th, and it culminates with the group that we have will produce their own holiday concert, an Alaska Music One concert with live bands. We've already got bands signed up to do that. So they get to produce a live show with bands on a Friday night. And so during the weeks they do the 15-hour course, they learn all the skills necessary to become a TV production company in the studio. So, but something we can do special now that the cafeteria is running and Tuesdays are day for food pantry and cafeteria is that we're going to offer dinner. So the people can come in at 5:30 before the course and we'll feed them dinner because they really don't have time to go home and get dinner. So, and since we're cooking all day anyway on Tuesday, the families can come in and get some dinner first and then start the course on that. So there is, you can register if you want online and go to showrunnercamp.org if you want to do that, but it's really unnecessary. Just come on in on this Tuesday. And if you can't make it the first Tuesday, we are good at catching people up in the course. But
and this is no charge.
Right. So it's no charge. We've got donors and sponsors that have agreed to pay for both the food and for the course and so for the materials for the course. So it's a no charge at all to the families. And this really came also out of a lot of the parents and adults that were with bringing their kids said, gee, I'd like to learn this too. And we said, you know what? That's a good idea. So that's how we started doing it was
yeah,
that they would do it.
It seems pretty cool because, you know, you mentioned, Karen, about families doing it, you know, and a lot of teenagers want to create their own YouTube channel or they want to create shorts or they want to figure out how to stream some kind of event or something. And, you know, you could get your parents involved. I know there's that really fun father-daughter in Australia who do the lip-syncing videos all the time. And they put really good production value in there. And so it's really like it could be a really cool, wholesome family event to create, you know, some kind of series for yourself. Obviously, you're going to get to learn how to produce like a rock show or a band, you know, music show. Mm-hmm. But it could be anything that you end up
producing. Right. The skills apply all the way down to anything. So,
and I know you have like TV cameras and you have the sound equipment, but then you can apply that to your iPhone.
Right.
You know, the iPhone takes great video and
it does.
You know, and you can get a little thing that you hold on. But learning, like you're saying, Karen, like camera angles, shots, making sure that, you know, the theory of three or whatever it is, all that good stuff,
three camera studio.
Yeah.
Also, all graduates of the course have a right to use the studio after. afterwards.
Oh, wow.
So if you come and you use the learn it, so you can then after that you can say you want to use the studio, we'll accommodate you and let you come in and use the studio for another use.
That is amazing. So it's showrunnercamp.org. You can sign up for that. It's starting next Tuesday. It'll run through December, you said?
Yeah, it runs through December 16th. So it's every Tuesday night. Like I said, we provide dinner at 5:30 and 2 hours a night on Tuesdays all the way through. And it's a 15-week course. It's based on a college textbook that colleges teach. And we teach everything about how to become a TV production company.
Wow, that's great. That's a wonderful way to get behind the scenes and learn how to use all that equipment and really get yourself situated. It's great for families, as Karen said. You did mention, Bradley, about the food on Tuesdays. So let's talk a little bit about what else is going on at the church. I know you got a lot of stuff going there. Yeah. You do need volunteers as well, I'm sure.
We do. And also we're us and the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, where we get our food mostly, is also starting to really run short on food. You know, a lot of the federal grant programs have been, not surprisingly, cut. And so we are getting concerned about getting enough food, and so are they. And so we also, because of the Glory Hall now deciding to feed there only the people that are living there, we're up from we were doing meals on Tuesdays from noon to 4:30, and on Saturdays noon to 1:30. We were doing maybe 200 meals a week. Now we're up to almost 500 meals a week.
Whoa.
It's a huge number, and that is hugely, happy to do it, but it's hugely taxing to do that. And also the food bank was giving out a lot of food, and that's Tuesdays, also noon to 4:30, but not Saturdays. But we had a lot of food coming through grant programs that have all ended. And so now that's becoming a problem. So we're thinking of doing a telethon in the studio for the benefit of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank sometime end of October, November, for maybe like 3 hours to help raise some money as another thing for that. So that'd be a good use of to do that. So we always looking for volunteers, looking for donations to the food bank. That's where we get our food from. We're not trying to get stuff for us. We can always use help to help prepare food. You know, we did this major $50,000 renovation of the kitchen. We're still finishing that up. So we're able to do much more now. We're actually baking our own bread with this renovation.
We
and we're different in the fact we're not a soup kitchen. We're a cafeteria. So people can come in and they can walk around like a college cafeteria, and they can pick what foods they want, and we use all food we get from the food bank.
Interesting.
You know, we don't buy food, and so we treat people with, we make sure everyone's treated with a lot of dignity, and they get a lot of choices to do. And they can take food to go as well as take food home. So people can box up food and take it to the people at home and all that. It's just such a need right now.
There is such a need, and I think probably one of the things is, you know, people will come. One, the community meal, you don't even necessarily have to be in need to come to the community meal.
Mm.
The World Happiness Survey, which they do every year, came out with their latest report, and in that they spent a whole chapter dealing with the importance of community meals as part of building relationships, building friendships, and increasing your happiness quotient.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you don't need the food, come and be a part of the community, because it's really very
We have
very
a whole dining.
Nice.
There's a whole dining room, a 40-person dining room.
Well, like it's a wonderful thing. Like I was just at this work conference, and we were talking about the word community. What does that really mean? And it is a shared space, right? It's a shared space where you're all getting together and for an event, or just to have relationship building, or just to be there for each other.
Yep.
And it sounds good. Like we were just talking to St. Vincent de Paul about the warming shelter opening up. I know you guys have done that in the past.
Yep.
Right.
And then I was wondering with Jennifer, like what do people do during the day? Well, obviously this is an option, is to go and grab a meal. And remind us again, Bradley, what days you're doing that now?
So the Resurrection Food Bank's always been up on Tuesday from noon to 4:30. The cafeteria is open the same hours with a dining room in the cafeteria. But we're also open for lunch on Saturdays, noon to 1:30.
Noon to 1:30 on Saturday. So Tuesday and Saturday. Okay, great. Yeah.
And a lot of people are coming in, and they're sitting, and they're having a meal, and, you know, it's really very relaxing and enjoyable. But then they're also asking, do you mind if I take some food with me? Because they don't know where their next meal is coming from.
Right, right.
And so, yes, sit, have a meal, get full, and then, yes, take something with you because you know you're going to have something to eat later.
Well, and as you mentioned, Bradley, the Southeast Alaska Food Bank needing food. So if people have extra food or want to make a donation there, that's where you get your food from to be able to provide this service.
Yep.
But so it's a good way to donate if you got some extra cans or extra whatever in your house.
Or some extra cash.
Extra cash, too,
yes.
Absolutely. And it's wonderful. And then is there anything else going on at the church that you want to mention?
I think that's it. If it's enough that keeping up.
It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot,
like
for, us to manage. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We were talking with Resurrection Lutheran Church as well as Juno Live Studio. It's the TV production course for all ages. It's starting next Tuesday. There is room for you to get involved. There is no charge, and you can get a meal while you do it, and you're going to be learning all about how to create a production behind the scenes and with great cameras and good equipment and all that stuff. And that'll keep you busy through December from 6 to 8 on Tuesdays, which is pretty cool. And, of course, you can go to showrunnercamp.org to sign up for that. But as Bradley said, you don't even have to sign up. Just show up. And then what's the where do we find out information about the church? What's the website for the church?
rlcjuno.org.
Okay. rlcjuno.org as well. Yes. Excellent. Karen, Bradley, thank you so much. Gunatish, for being here today. Really appreciate you and all the work that you do in our community.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Okay, now it's time for this week's Our Living Lands from Native Voice One. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. For millennia, Indigenous people have intentionally set fires to care for the land. Colonization and policy largely put an end to those practices, though the tradition endured. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Murphy Woodhouse reports, a new law in California has opened the door to restore cultural burning, a potential model for the rest of the West.
On a late June afternoon, in the remote Northern California town of Orleans, Michael Sanchez hops into a Wildland fire truck. He's the prescribed fire and fuel specialist for the Karuk tribe and helps organize their cultural burns, including those in his neighborhood that day.
And yeah, one of the burns is my house, so I've been kind of taking the main lead on preparing that.
While small, they represent a major step forward in the tribe's long-standing effort to promote cultural burning. It's the fruit of years of advocacy and collaboration with federal agencies and nonprofits to bring down barriers to putting good fire on the ground. In 2022, the state established a claims fund for when fires set by landowners and tribes cause damage, reducing financial risk for burners and the public. Then last fall, Senate Bill 310 was unanimously approved. It allows tribes to enter into agreements with the state and bypass regulatory requirements to burn. Karuk leaders called it a chance to atone for efforts to stamp out burning well into the 20th century. Sanchez says 310 has made burning much simpler. He drives past an orange sign notifying drivers of the cultural burn.
That's one of the requirements, and then also a 72-hour notification to local agencies, Forest Service.
There are a few other steps, like written permission from landowners, but that's about it.
Yep, so yeah, this is my place here.
The first burn of the day is in an adjoining yard. Using lighters, a Karuk trio sets the dry grass and leaves ablaze, checking it with a simple hose. Bill Tripp, the tribe's natural resources director, says the fires help protect homes.
Well, today we're just trying to get rid of this stuff that's going to catch an ember and start a spot fire in the summer.
Bill was taught to burn as a young boy by his great-grandmother, bearer of a time immemorial tradition of using fire for ceremonies in the care of key animal and plant species, like hazel, used for basketry. Tripp is the only tribal council recognized practitioner able to oversee burns, but his people created a process to train more. He and others see these small projects as a way to rebuild skills and a sense of setting fires as a common practice.
I would like to see 10 houses just get together, have a barbecue, and get it all burnt in a 2-3 day window.
In 2023, a major federal commission said that beneficial fire, which includes cultural and prescribed burning, is essential to restoring ecosystem health and reducing wildfire risk.
We don't need to reinvent the wheel here.
Dylan Cruz is the president of Sustainable Northwest. Inspired by reforms in California, the nonprofit helped push for a claims fund in Washington and Oregon. While rare, intentional burns can escape control and cause significant harm.
We want to do more cultural burning, the biggest limiting factor or concerns is around liability issues.
He encourages other Western states to work with tribal nations to remove barriers to cultural burning. In a grass field on the outskirts of Orleans, a small team is burning a strip of black around the edge.
Once we get a black line around it, then we can let it rip.
That's Bill's brother, Jacob Tripp. Trailing behind the slow-marching flames, a group of teenagers, seasonal workers for the Natural Resources Department, sprays the edges with bladder bags. Think water guns attached to water-filled backpacks. It's Karuk Youth Council Secretary Chloe King's first burn.
I feel like there's a lot of adrenaline going through me right now, but I definitely feel like I'm doing the best thing for the land right now.
Black line complete, the burner's light strips through the interior. Unsatisfied with the speed of progress, Jacob pulls out a propane torch. When he gets back to the first turn of the black line, the flames intensify and then tear through the remaining dry grass. Boxed in by black, the flames quickly diminish.
This is awesome. That was crazy.
Chloe has caught the fire bug. Here's Bill.
A really important part of our Karuk educational process is to make sure that we're putting fire in the hands of our children at a young age and teaching them how to be responsible with it.
Just like his great-grandmother did with him. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
Tune in next week to hear more about the Karuk's burning practices and how communities across the country could learn from them. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Next Thursday at Devil's Club Brewing, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council is kicking off what they hope is to be a recurring series, Jack Laughs. The first event is Sam Miller Comedy Show, which features headliner Sam Miller and locals Carrie Stone and Nick West. You can find out more information at jahc.org. And here to give us even more details, and maybe a joke or two, I don't know, we'll see, Zach Pease, special events producer from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Gunathchish Wasiti, how are you today, Zach?
I'm good, Boston. How are you?
I am excellent. It's a wonderful Friday. We're wrapping up our membership drive, and everything is groovy, and I'm ready to laugh.
Me too.
I mean, I always feel like, especially in the world we live in right now, especially even this week, we need some laughs.
Big time, especially with the weather changing back to Juno standard.
We love the Juno standard. So where did this idea come from? We'll get to Sam Miller and how you got him, but where did this idea come from for Jack Laughs?
Yeah, actually, when the whole thing started, it was Sam Miller. Sam had three tour dates drop down south and posted about it on Instagram, and I hit him up and asked if he wanted to come to Juno. And he said, that's hilarious. I had people in Cordova and people in Anchorage also ask if I wanted to come to Alaska.
All because you saw him have dates like close by in the Northwest somewhere?
Yeah, he just had three tour dates drop and said, okay, who wants me? And three different cities in Alaska, towns in Alaska, hit him up.
Is he going to those places?
Yeah, then? So he's going to Juno on Thursday, the 25th. And then he flies to Cordova and does a show and then flies up to Anchorage for the weekend.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. And so we managed to book him a cute little mini Alaska tour.
A little mini Alaska tour. Well, great. Yeah. That's so awesome. And so this position that you have, special events producer, sort of a new position there at the Jack, and you're going to be creating events like this, like Jack Laughs.
Yeah. And I'm hoping this turns into a season of comedians coming to town. I'm working on all sorts of events, building up, trying to build up a few seasons of events at a few different locations. And if you're listening and you think to yourself, hey, we have a space and we would love to have some events, hit me up.
Awesome.
I'd love to help you do that.
Because it seems like this one's going to be at Devil's Club. And
yes.
I feel like in terms of events and bringing people to town, comedians is one of the easier things because really it just has to fit into their schedule because they don't have sets. They have sets, but it's sets of jokes, right, as opposed to building of sets.
Right.
Things like that. Shows, yeah. Bands, which have instruments and things like that. So comedians, it's like you need a microphone and an audience.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of touring comedians that are in a price range that is also easy to bring to town, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you start looking at bands, not only do you have a bunch of tech and maybe people that travel with them to run lights or audio, but you also have paying a whole band. And with right. a comedian, you can just pay a comedian. Mm-hmm. You have less flights to pay for.
Right.
The travel expense, hotel, everything is just a whole lot easier with a comedian.
So and I feel great. Like doing a series of that over the winter months when it's dark, cold, you know, and we just want to have a little fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be fantastic. So tell me a little bit about Sam Miller. What's his style? What kind of jokes does he tell?
Yeah. I actually brought Sam's little write-up.
Okay, cool.
From his website, sammillercomedy.com. And this is what Sam has to say about himself. Sam Miller is a nationally touring comedian from Olympia, Washington. He is 6'6", 360 pounds, has two kids, one of them on purpose. He's been married for 13 years and has been clean and sober for 15 years. Sam likes to make jokes about what it's like to be a sober parent. He also likes to make jokes about what jail's like in Yakima. His first album and special Round Trip was recorded and filmed under the tutelage of Grammy-winning producer Dan Schlizel, whose indie label Stand Up Records Sam has recently signed a 3-album deal with. Round Trip was released October 27th, 2023, and immediately went to number 1 on the iTunes comedy charts, and it even broke the top 200 overall charts. Sam is a recurring guest and has been heard by an estimated 2.5 million listeners on the nationally syndicated Bob and Tom radio show.
Mm.
Yeah. He's written for Newsweek. He was the runner-up in 2021 Seattle International Comedy Competition and won the Comedy on Trial competition in 2017. And he's headlined multiple major comedy clubs, including the Laugh Factory in Chicago. He's also performed with the Addicts Comedy Tour and NA and AA conventions all over the country. For 3 consecutive years, he won awards at the Best of Olympia issue of the Weekly Volcano in 2016, Best Local Hero, 2017, Best Local Celebrity, and 2018, Best Comic Relief.
Wow.
So that's a little bit about Sam.
So that is somebody that you want to see. Sounds like he does some good dad humor. Very good stuff. I love that kind of thing. Dad jokes are good. Kid humor is good. Laugh at yourself as being a parent.
Yeah. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
I have been watching his comedy for a few years now, and everything he does, he transitions really well between a lot of different subject matter, and the way he will kind of like bait and switch you
is
just really, really, really great.
I love that.
I think he's incredibly talented.
The serendipity of him having dates drop out and being able to get to Alaska is really cool. It's going to be at Devil's Club Brewing. Sam Miller is going to be headlining. The doors open at 6. The show's at 6:30, so it's a little early, which is nice.
A little bit early, yeah.
But then tell me a little bit about the local talent that's going to be opening for him, Carrie Stone and Nick West.
Yeah, they're both hilarious.
Yeah.
I met Carrie. Carrie Stone was my neighbor for a long time. We lived in the same apartment building.
Oh, wow.
Her and her husband just got a house. Good job, you guys.
Yeah.
I started hosting a weekly comedy open mic at Devil's Club.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, Carrie was there and crushed.
Nice.
And I was just blown away. And Nick West, I met at Devil's Club comedy open mic.
Okay.
And he lived in Los Angeles for a while and has been doing comedy for a long time and is incredibly talented. We're really lucky to just have both these people doing comedy at the show and in the community I mean, they're both phenomenal comics, can really write a set down and really deliver a set. And they just, the way they construct and the way they, you know, build jokes and deliver jokes, both their deliveries are phenomenal.
That's cool. And so I know tickets are available at jack.org. What are we talking price-wise there?
It's $25 pre-show.
Okay.
And then $35 at the door.
Okay.
There's also a VIP section that hasn't sold yet for, I think it's $450. I don't have it right in front of me. And it's six seats. So if you and five friends want to go sit on the couch and have a private little table off to the side where the comics go in and out. There's a VIP section for sale. And then we do have a true cost ticket price of, I think it's $50, which is just kind of acknowledging how much work goes into putting on even a comedy show, which, as we talked about, is simpler than doing multiple bands, but still requires a ton of labor, a ton of time, and a decent amount of money.
Absolutely. It's awesome. It's Jack Laughs. They're going to present Sam Miller Comedy Show with openers Carrie Stone and Nick West. It's next Thursday night, the 25th. Doors open at 6. The show's at 6:30. You can find tickets at jahc.org. Let's hope it goes well so that Zach can get more comedians up here and we can all have a little fun and some laughs in the times that we're living in right now.
Yeah, let's bring some comics up this winter. It'd be great.
I love that. Thank you so much, Zach. I really appreciate you being here today.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it, Boston.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Local stories, local events, local connection, made possible by you via your donation and membership at ktoo.org. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. You can find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can find live stream archives on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines, Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh, and have a fantastic Juno weekend.